Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In this episode of the Football History Headlines, we discuss the first Auburn versus Alabama football game and some NFL rule changes for 1967, as well as many more Hall of Fame legendary stories of birthdays of Hall of Famers coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we are going to cover the date of February 22nd in football history, because we have football history each and every day of the year. We're going to go all the way back to 1893, the 19th century, where Alabama and Auburn played each other on what would, in essence, would become the first I ever played Iron Bowl. Now, only 450 people were in attendance at Birmingham's Lakeview Baseball Park on February 22, 1893, to witness a 32-22 Auburn victory per the NCAA.com story. Little did the handful of football fans know on that winter day realize what this would develop into be the first game of these two eventual SEC powerhouses, and not just SEC, but NCAA powerhouses. Now, the Iron Bowl is one of the most looked forward to matchups every season by college football fans. We've covered many of the famous players and plays of this game from the series, the football history headlines like Bo Jackson, Kenny Stabler, Joe Namath, and more. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the most famous Iron Bowl games from a very good article that's written. But the term Iron Bowl, it came from the venue that the game had been played at for many years, the Birmingham, Alabama's Legion Field. Now, the city of Birmingham is known for its historic role in the steel industry, and these two top-flight college programs from the state of Alabama treated the throngs at Legion Field for some great memories. The game was predominantly played there from the late 1940s until 1989, with the tickets being split between two schools, so half the fans each fan base were there. The series was interrupted for some four decades after a 1907 contest, and when it resumed, it became quite a popular game. The 1907 game that had some allegedly questionable dirty plays and clamoring from both sides to bring outside officiating crews to promote a fair playing field, per an article on angelfire.com. The article points out to contract disputes as being the main reason for the series being suspended in the first place. Now, during the 1907 game, the hotel allowance for the 17-man from each team was $2 per player per day, including lodging and meals. On January 23, 1908, Alabama coach J.W. Pollard received a proposed contract from Auburn football manager Thomas Bragg, asking for $3.50 per day for 22 men from each team for two nights for a game to be played at Birmingham's fairgrounds. Alabama offered $3 per day and 20 men for two nights. And even then, Auburn and Alabama fans had trouble agreeing on anything. And apparently, a discrepancy of some $34 could not be resolved until 41 years later. The Tigers and the Crimson Tide are so intertwined in the fabric of the citizens of Alabama that the victors gained bragging rights in the state, and there have even been some business dealings reported that were dependent on the game's outcome. Now, let's talk about some of the most famous Iron Bowls of all time, or some of the most popular ones. The first one, you know, there's a great article on this on athlonsports.com, where they talk about the top five greatest Alabama versus Auburn games of all time. And this is what they say. Number five was a 1982 matchup on November 27th, where Auburn won 23-22 over Bama. and the Tigers have lost 9 straight to the Crimson Tide going into that game and trailed by 5 in the fourth quarter. But this time they had a future college football legend in the backfield. Auburn drove 66 yards, and freshman Bo Jackson had 114 rushing yards and jumped over the top of the pile with 2:26 left in the game to win the game for Auburn. So that was a great victory. We had the number 4 one was a 28-27 Auburn win in November 26, 2010. Many of us may remember this. You know, Bama jumped out to an early lead. It's 24-0. Looked like it was all over. And Cam Newton in the number 2 Auburn, they came back. The defense stiffened up, and Newton threw 3 touchdowns and ran for another as the Tigers escaped Tuscaloosa with that 1-point victory with Cam Newton on that year. Number 3 on their list was Auburn 17-16 over Alabama. Seems like this is pretty one-sided here, all 1-point games. And to match up these two top 10 teams that year, back in 1972 on December 2nd, had the wildest fourth quarter this side of many games. And Alabama held Auburn at 80 yards of total offense and led 16-3 with 5:30 to go as Crimson Tide lined up to punt. And Greg Gant took the snap, but Auburn's Bill Newton blocked the kick, and Dave Langer picked up the ball and ran in the end zone. A few minutes later, they accomplished the same feat. So 2 block punts for touchdowns wins the game for Auburn. We covered that back on our December 2nd football history headlines. You remember that one. So that was truly a great game. They have another one. These are all Auburn victories, it seems like. A 48-45 win by Auburn in 2019. I think most of us remember that. It was a great shootout that came down to an 11-yard touchdown run by Sean Shivers in the 2-point conversion to put the team up 48-45. And Alabama drove down the field but missed the field goal attempt, which would have tied the game. So Auburn held on the line. Number 1 on Athlon Sports was Auburn 34, Alabama 28, November 30th, 2013. And, Alabama was a 2-time defending champion, undefeated. Auburn was 10-1, and the winner of the game was going to the SEC championship the following Saturday. And it came down to, T.J. Yeldon ran out of bounds at the Auburn 38-yard line with 1 second on the clock, and the Crimson Tide lined up for a 57-yard field goal. And punt returner Chris Davis fielded the offline kick 9 yards deep in the end zone and ran it all the way back. It's known as the kick six. It's arguably maybe one of the greatest plays in all of college football history, and that's what they have as the number 1 game there. I'm not sure why they have every single one of them being an Auburn win, but truly some great Iron Bowl games nonetheless that we got to cover there for you. So great article on Athlon Sports. Now we had some more history on February 22nd, 1967. The NFL, they changed the goalpost shape and size. And a 6-foot wide border around the field becomes standardized in the NFL. Seems it's odd for us to watch vintage football of NFL games prior to 1974 and see the goalposts on the goal line rather than on the end lines where they stand today. A 1974 rule pushed each of the posts back 10 yards deeper, mainly for player safety. And we're not going to focus on that rule change in this edition, but rather on the one that occurred 7 seasons earlier when the H-style posts were retired from the NFL field goals and the more modern Y or slingshot-style edition of the goalposts became standard equipment. This elimination of one obstacle on each goal line at the time afforded players and officials less of a chance of collision into said post, but it also opened up the running game and passing lanes just a tad too. An article on SportsIllustrated.com's website says that the first dozen years of the NFL's existence, the league simply played by the very popular college rules. And the NCAA in 1927 took the posts and set them safely on the end line like we know today. And in 1933, the NFL finally wrote its own rule book. In an effort to increase field goal attempts because of the general feeling that there was too many ties, the NFL moved the uprights back to the goal line, make it 10 yards shorter for the kickers. That's where they stayed for some 4 decades. But the other rule revision that occurred on February 22, 1967 was the addition of that 6-foot boundary around the entire field. And the American Football Fandom page describes the purpose quite well. They say its outer edge designates the closest that non-players can be to the field and thus enables the game officials to have a running lane to work in. And as a former high school official, I can attest that these clear zones around a playing field are vitally important for the safety of the participants, sideline personnel, and the game officials. It's pretty dangerous on there, especially the folks that, in stripes that don't have pads on, when you have some really great athletes coming at you at full speed. Now, we have one Hall of Fame birthday today to celebrate. February 22nd, 1915, Springfield, Massachusetts, the great Trinity College halfback, Mickey Kabrowski, was born. Now, Mickey may be the best athlete to have ever attended Trinity, as the National Football Foundation states, as he was a two-time first-team All-American. Now, Kabrowski earned 11 letters during his first 4 years at Trinity, three in football and four each in basketball and baseball. Quite the athlete. The doors of the College Football Hall of Fame opened wide for Mickey Kabrowski in 2011 as he received his place in honor among the football legends there. He joined the Giants for the 1937 seasons in New York after playing a season of minor league baseball, but a bad injury ended his very promising professional athletic career that first season. And too bad we never got to see the full potential of Mickey Kabrowski in professional football. We could be talking about Pro Football Hall of Fame possibly too, if he would have not been injured in that. So some great athletes, some great things talking about the Iron Bowl, the goalpost, the line, and the six-foot board around it. Just some great history, and we're glad that we could cover it for you today. We hope you'll join us back tomorrow for some more exciting football history. And don't forget, we have a special football history rewind here for this Wednesday, the 22nd. So you want to make sure you check out. We are in the year of 1907 and covering some great history there too. Also, don't forget to check us out on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, where we cover sports history by the numbers and the gear and apparel that the teams and competitors wore. And I think you'll learn a lot about football, baseball, basketball, hockey, and auto racing history. And we're going to be covering some more here in the coming months. So we hope you'll check us out there, too. Till tomorrow, everybody, have a great Gridiron Day.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. A special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.